everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, Thursday edition. It's October the 3rd, 2024. A happy new year, Tom, to all of our Jewish friends. As the Jewish new
what is it, Rosh Hashanah?
Rosh Hashanah.
Rosh Hashanah.
Today. And so it's the Jewish New Year. So it will be a very warm day, as usual.
What is the appropriate greeting? Not happy Jewish New Year. It must be some greeting.
Well, I've always kind of just said kind of happy New Year. So
okay, anyway. That works. Or happy Rosh Hashanah.
There you go. We'll begin our 15th year with our radio program in January for the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media family, with five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts. Very convenient, just put in the search bar with the name of the person that was interviewed, and it will pop up there for you. We go all the way back to the first week of January 2011 for our program. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, with me in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the lone member on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors, who is a Republican, District 4 Supervisor Steve Christie. Supervisor Christie, how's your day going so far?
So far, so great. It's always good to be with you. Thanks, Bill.
So we're just having this incredible heat spell where we're breaking records, you know, sometimes 15 to almost 20 degrees above normal. Are things drying out up in your district up on Mount Lemmon, which is part of District 4?
Yeah, it is. And we are paying close particular attention to the heat and the post-monsoon vegetation.
Yeah, we don't want any late season fires.
Yeah, and the Forest Service tells us they are keeping a close eye on that drying trend, and up on the top, they're planning pile burning this fall, and there are still good conditions with fuel moisture, but future burns will be based on whatever the current conditions are, and naturally lower elevations are dying out faster due to heat and wind, and the Coronado National Forest is currently listed as high for fire risk, so we encourage visitors to be mindful of campfires and watch any kind of fire dangers and keep them in check. And just so everybody knows, they've got a very popular event that's an annual celebration, and there's two weekends left of the, I guess it's
Oktoberfest.
Yeah, the super popular Mount Lemmon Ski Valley Oktoberfest, and you can check it out on their Facebook page for more information.
The hotel's doing well too, I hear.
Very well, and don't forget to, if you bring trash into Mount Lemmon area, take it back out with you, and you can always pick up one of our District 4 free trash bags at the community center. And also, again, be very mindful of the fire danger.
Yeah, they'll have to be very careful with any kind of controlled burns as things really are drying out. Doesn't take long in the desert. This week at the Board of Supervisors meeting, I think it was this week, you wanted to honor a gentleman who was one of your colleagues when you were in the automobile business, Mr. O'Reilly. Buck O'Reilly, what, 96?
94 is my understanding.
And the family business started 100 years ago.
That's why we were honoring him. He's one of the few business owners that have survived in the community for 100 years. The fact that he's been able to go through the tides and the tumult of the automobile business for 100 years with his family is a remarkable event, and also it was a real deep personal honor for me because I became very close with Buck and his family, and his son-in-law Rob Draper is now the new dealer, has taken over the dealership and runs it and owns it with Buck's daughter Amy O'Reilly Draper. So they were there to accept the award, and they're just terrific people. And O'Reilly Chevrolet, as I said at the event, really, it being a friendly competitor and growing up in the car business and having a very good corporate relationship with O'Reilly Chevrolet has always been kind of the gold standard of automobile dealerships, and that's due in no uncertain terms to Buck O'Reilly's leadership. He's a great car dealer, a great community leader, and a real icon in the Tucson community. And it's a real honor for me to say hats off to Buck O'Reilly and the Drapers and O'Reilly Chevrolet for celebrating 100 years of doing business in Pima County.
So you were in the automobile business a total of how many years?
Right at around 40.
40 years. So your primary competition then were the O'Reillys and I guess Mr. Click, right?
O'Reilly, Click, the Whiteman family at Royal Buick, Carl Watson and his family over at Watson Chevrolet, the Rowe family at the Toyota dealership, DeCristofano at Volvo, and then they became the great Subaru dealers that they are.
Rocky, Christopher.
Rocky, and then Tom Cabedo and John Cabedo, his dad, at Cabedo Pontiac, then now Cadillac, GMC and Buick. I've always said Tucson is very lucky because they have such a high quality of automobile dealers, always have had and still do, even though there's been a lot of mergers and acquisitions and changes in the entire dealership structure locally, but there's still that core family values of the car dealer on the corner where you go in and make a deal with the dealer himself and shake hands. Those were the great halcyon days of the automobile business. Now, of course, it's all internet and computer driven and things of that nature, which
it's a tough business with very little margin, right?
Very little margin
for profit, particularly
the new car side. So you have to kind of make sure that you're providing
your back end
service and
service
parts
department.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's a lot of history, certainly for the O'Reillys, and we wish them well.
You remember Frank McClure at Homestuddle, Florida?
Yeah, he was
another. Another icon in our community.
I mean, we could talk the whole half hour about that because I remember my first time around here when I came out to the U of A in the mid to late 60s. The automobile dealerships were concentrated on Speedway. And then they moved over to 22nd Street. And then the auto mall came along. Mm-hmm. When the auto mall was created, was there some consensus among the dealers that this was a good move? We'd all go together in it? Or?
Yeah, definitely. that was driven by Jim Click. He made the offer to purchase that property and to
rent more over there.
And to arrange for other dealers who had interest. And the manufacturers liked it too because they did studies of market trends and sales, and they determined that if you have auto dealers in a cluster, you're going to have all the people who want to buy cars go there because you have such easy choice and access to so many dealers.
Mm-hmm. So if they're not happy with one brand, they can go
next right door. Across the street or next door.
One item that has come up since we talked a month or so ago, the library, there had been talk about, a reorg. It looks like the reorganization of the library, there will be no closures. On the library board, a listener pointed out you did not appoint someone to the board. Was there a reason for that?
A lot of the issues dealing with appointing someone to the library board are the times and places they meet.
Okay.
Our district, and it requires someone from our District 4, and of course we're on the Far East Side, and they have meetings once a month at 5 o'clock downtown.
Yeah.
And to get someone who's interested in pursuing the library board position, it requires quite an extensive amount of sacrifice to drive downtown during rush hour, find parking, go to the meeting, and very often even those meetings are canceled due to lack of quorum. And we've offered numerous folks to do it, and then when they find out what it's all entailed,
then they back out.
They demur. So it's a tough position to fill, and I can understand the sacrifices that they have to make to do it, so that makes it doubly hard.
Are you happy with just keeping the library system the way it is right now then?
No, I'm really more interested in seeing what the plans are to reimagine it. And, of course, there are a lot of properties, a lot of bricks and mortar. The library system is not the library system that we grew up in. I remember going to Himmel Park and just poring over books on the weekend and reading for hours there. And that whole kind of ethos is no longer with us. Everything is on the online
digital,
or
digital
or internet. And now we're finding that we're faced with social issues of homeless folks and mentally challenged, or I should say mentally ill individuals frequenting libraries, which doesn't lead to a family-friendly environment. Of course, then you have the controversy of what kinds of books are being made available to children, and that's a whole other issue as well. So all this trend and all this development really makes us pause to say, what do we need in libraries, and how do we make them somewhat viable for our current status?
So you'd like to see the whole reorganization thing studied?
I'd like to see it studied, and quite frankly, from a cost savings, if there's ways to consolidate certain branches or close certain branches and sell the property. That's kind of a novel thing when I bring that up at board meetings or within county administration. Why is Pima County so involved in acquiring properties? Let's look at turning many properties over for sale and sending them back to the private sector so we can get a tax base. But that's, again, a whole nother subject. But yes, I'm interested to see how people are looking at reimagining the library system.
All right. Let's pause right here with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. Mr. Christie, guess what? Mona's Danish Bakery is back with us, and we're delighted to have Mona's back on board. They took a little break during the summer season, but they're back with the Buckmaster Show. They're very comfortable here, and they should be, because we send a lot of Buckmaster Show listeners up to Mona's Danish Bakery. And when I say up, it's up at northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. From where I live, it is just up the road, probably about a mile or mile and a half north. It is the home of the Danish Kringle, open for breakfast and lunch, and you can now have an alcoholic beverage with your meal. They've got a liquor license, and they are ready to serve you. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. More with Steve Christie. It's the Buckmaster Show right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. All right, welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It is the Jewish New Year, so I'm going to try this. Shana Tova means happy. Tom's laughing on the other side of the glass. I think I've got it right, that is Happy New Year for our Jewish friend Steve Christie.
That's what my understanding is, too. Yes, Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. All right. We talked a little bit about libraries, talked about automobile dealerships. Going back to autos, and of course, that leads me to think about the RTA. General Maxwell, the chair of the Regional Transportation Board, has worked just tirelessly on this RTA Next plan to try to get something before, when I say before the eyes and ears of the voters, before there's even an election, kind of like listening sessions. Are we making progress? Is that what you're hearing?
Well, I can't say as progress per se. One of the things I did understand was that the vote has been kind of in a very experimental fashion thrown out there as possibly November 25th of 2025. I'm not sure if that's going to be a viable voting date.
I think they wanted to go in May, but then the city decided to put on an election in March.
Yeah, and then you've got, you know, the holidays, Thanksgiving, and things of that nature. And, you know, one of the things that I always found rather humorous was the city of Tucson would tout that in these tax-raising elections that they've conducted over the years recently, that they've had like 80% approval of these tax increases, but barely 20% of the eligible voters have voted. So
yeah,
is that a
very small percentage?
Very small percentage. And in my district, District 4, we've got one major project out on Colossal Cave Road that's going to hopefully correct the problem of having the double railroad tracks out in the center of Vail. That's about it, but that's a big issue. And I've already had criticism from my colleagues on the board on that project, and that kind of depletes any incentive for a lot of my constituents to really want to get behind the RTA. And then the folks in Green Valley, there's nothing being offered for a project down there. So I'm a firm believer in the RTA. I'm a huge supporter. I was a founding member of the Citizens Advisory Committee, and I chaired the RTA. I believe in what it's been doing. But I think that, as I say, the city of Tucson is trying to weasel its way into getting what it wants, and if it doesn't, it's going to make the RTA die by 1,000 cuts.
So you're saying they're kind of muscling their way through this whole program?
Well, they're muscling and threatening and making it very, very difficult to continue in a very positive manner. And I've always said, gosh, we've always needed a second option that did not include the city of Tucson.
Now, you talked about that 3 years ago.
Yeah, and here we are.
What are we going to do about this situation with Sheriff Nanos's handling of that accusation that a sergeant sexually assaulted a female deputy at a holiday party?
Well, we asked that we have a report or an update or some kind of a statement at the Board of Supervisors level at a meeting with Sheriff Nanos, and he did not choose to show up. And, of course, he is a duly elected public official, and there is nothing compelling that would cause the sheriff to have to show up. I was hopefully giving him an option to make a statement to clarify the situation and give everybody an update and take this cloud that's hanging over the sheriff's department and this whole incident out of the picture. He chose not to take advantage of that. And I did hear through the grapevine that one of the reasons why he didn't show up was he was not aware that it was on the agenda.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Well, there are on every agenda, there are sometimes as much as millions of dollars being appropriated or discussed or discerned on the agenda for the sheriff's department. Now, you mean to tell me that no one's watching the agenda as it comes up every 2 weeks, twice a month, that it might affect the sheriff's department? And by the same token, are they telling me that they had no awareness that there was an opportunity to discuss this issue? I'm disappointed. I thought the sheriff could have had a great chance to either clear the situation up or to give more information or at least to keep the public in a transparent form. But he chose not to, and I think he missed out and made a bad mistake and a blunder not showing up. And believe me,
he feels it's over because the Attorney General's office did say they found no evidence of criminal wrongdoing by the sheriff and his staff, but may have violated several department policies.
And that was the key issue. What does he have to say about that, and what does it mean? And what are those issues that the Attorney General found out about? So it's all together in a kind of a holistic fashion that the sheriff had an opportunity to address issues. He chose not to show up, which is his right, but I think he missed a very valuable opportunity to make clarity in this whole scenario.
Pima County's been opposed to kind of the whole Copper, well, going all the way back to Rosemont, it's now called Copper World. But you've, all along, you've been a big supporter of our mining industry.
I am, and I've, as a native Tucsonan and growing up, I know the value of the copper industry in the fabric of our community. We're the old saying about going back to the original five C's of Arizona economic development. And here we've got a beautiful facility with Caterpillar. And who is their number one customer? The mining industry. And so we're making all kinds of amends and concessions to have a beautiful Caterpillar headquarters here. But just a few miles away, we've got an opportunity to contribute to, I've heard, 15-20% of the world's copper and related minerals contribution. And we're not supporting that. Pima County desperately needs jobs. And this is a great opportunity to provide many, many jobs, and it's the sensitivity of copper mining to the environment has transformed itself over the last half century, and all of the hyperbole and melodrama about what you're going to have gravel coming out of your faucet because of this, and you won't be able to breathe because there's dust. That's just very dangerous fear mongering, and it needs to stop because it's not true. And I assure you, knowing the folks at Hudbay and they're reaching out to the community, they will be excellent partners. And one thing that people aren't taking advantage of or looking at, they're going to be such good partners that they're going to be willing to contribute to many, many events and many associations and many causes in Pima County in order to be a good neighbor. And this whole issue of on one hand supporting certain elements of the copper industry and then absolutely abominating others is wrong. And we need the copper industry, we need the mining industry, and we need this project to go through. And it looks like ADEQ and other regulatory entities are agreeing with that.
You know, this goes back to 2007.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
So you have to give Hudbay some sort of kudos because at one point they were tied up in court, which stopped everything at Rosemont. So while the courts were deciding what was going on, Hudbay started looking at their private lands around Rosemont on the Santa Rita's west side, And lo and behold, while they were waiting for the court decision, they found this wealth of copper. So in one regard, I guess we should be thankful to the anti-Rosemont people for providing the opportunity to find better copper fields and a more opulent copper source than the one that was tied up in court.
Hurricane Helene, the price tag is up to $200+ billion, Steve Christie. We've talked about the major insurance carriers looking at places in California, Florida, saying, we're just not going to insure. And if we do insure, it's going to be a hefty price tag. They've been also talking about Mount Lemmon.
Yeah, this will...
And we have very little time, but I wanted to get that in there.
Well, I appreciate that. And this is going to send ripples through the insurance industry, and it's going to definitely have an impact on affected areas that have already felt the increase in premiums and the lack of coverage. And we're working through our state legislature, hopefully to find some relief, and we'll continue to do so. My office has been on the forefront of this from the beginning, and we're going to follow it through.
All right, Steve Christie.
Oh, by the way,
yes.
Did I tell you that
I bet
that
you're going to say
I love being supervisor?
You really do enjoy the job, don't you?
I do.
Did you enjoy the car business more?
I'm thinking. I enjoyed the car business very much, but this is a whole different world, but in some ways very similar.
And some similarities.
Very, very many similarities, so I enjoy it. And not only do I enjoy it, but I love being supervisor.
All right, we're going to pause right here, midway point of the Buckmaster Show on Thursday. Tomorrow we're going to talk water. John Kamik, who is the Tucson Water Director, is going to be with us. Talk about those forever chemicals and what we're going to do about it. Take a break right here. Back after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay and Cloth, a beautiful new store in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from Oaxaca. Clay and Cloth also offers amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. See the selection on Instagram at MadMaxTheDog. Shop and visit Clay and Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 210 South Convent, just south of Cushing, by the TCC.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, moving right along midway point of our program in the Green Things, Ocala Village Studio. Stop by Green Things for all of your gardening needs. Right over by the Rito River, the 13-acre site, everything you could imagine for the garden. And in Zocalo Village, all the beautiful pottery that they have there as well. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. And if you're looking to cool off, I have a suggestion. Take you about approximately 3 hours from Tucson over to Silver City, where it's 87 degrees. So when we are up to about 104, they're about 10 degrees, maybe 15 cooler over in Silver City in Grant County. It is worth the drive, folks, and it's a great time of year to visit the Land of Enchantment, Southwest New Mexico. That's the website, .org, for more information. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. What say we do the live line? Go to the live line right now and to Vail, Arizona, the home of Dr. David Levy, our contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of the Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization. He's one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, 23 comets to his credit. Dr. Levy, I presume. How are you, sir?
Yes, it's good to hear your voice today, Dr. Buckmaster. And I really enjoyed listening to your advertisement about going to New Mexico, the Land of Enchantment, because that is where I met my Wendy. She was living in Las Cruces at the time. I've been to Silver City with her. I've really enjoyed it, and totally recommended for your listeners.
Yeah, it's a great getaway. I love New Mexico, and it's a wonderful experience, especially this time of year. You know, telescopes have been such an important part of your life, really beginning at a young age. And when you have to part with one of them, hey, that's an emotional thing, David Levy.
Yes, it is. While I was at our Adirondack Astronomy Retreat this summer, I suddenly made the decision to part with most of my telescopes.
What?
And it's been pretty successful because I'm getting on a little bit, and I want to try to simplify. And so in the last month, I've gotten rid of Pegasus, my wonderful 8-inch telescope, 8-inch F7 reflector, which is really the top-quality scope I had, and then another refractor, and then two smaller telescopes. So I just have a few left, but if any of your listeners want them, they need to get in touch with me. They probably could do that through you. And then they would need to make some kind of a donation to any charity of their choice.
Oh, okay.
And then we'd make arrangements for them to come down.
Okay.
But pretty much right now, I think the best way to do it, if any of them want any, they will be at Starizona. And I'll be moving them there in a couple of weeks.
Okay, that would probably be the best thing, to go over to Starizona. And again, I didn't give the location. Where is Starizona located?
They're moving up to Oracle, so they'll be at their new location.
And it's in Oracle?
It's up in Oracle. It's a little distance, but they will be opening up there, I think, within weeks.
Okay, all right. So if anybody's interested in one of Dr. David Levy's favorite telescopes, great opportunity there.
And we just gave Starizona a free plug.
Yeah, that's great. I don't mind. What's this about a bright comet? That a lot of hype over that. Is it?
Oh yes, and it's good hype. This is Comet Tsushin-Chan Atlas, and it has apparently survived its brush with the sun at its perihelion, and because it's a dusty comet, the dust is reflecting and refracting the sunlight, and the comet could become very bright in the next week or two. And it could become naked eye in the evening sky, not far from the sun, but you'd want to wait till the sun sets, and then you kind of look a little bit toward the south of the sun, and that's where the comet would be. And I will be trying it myself. I saw it last year when the comet was just brightening. It was really pretty faint. I had to use some averted imagination to see it. But it's quite a nice comet, and we're really due for one.
All right. We'll look forward to that. You think that might be about a week or so?
I would say a week or two, yeah.
Okay, we'll look forward to this. Time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show. David, it's all yours.
Yeah, thank you. Today is one that you've heard before, and it's one of my favorites. It's from Romeo and Juliet. And these words are actually on the moon right now, dropped there by the Lunar Prospector spacecraft. Come, gentle night. Come, lovely black-brown night. Give me my Romeo, and when I shall die, take him and cut him out in little stars, and he will make the face of heaven so fine that all the world will be in love with night and pay no worship to the garish sun.
Very nice. And again, why is that on the moon?
That is because after Jean Shoemaker, my colleague and friend, was killed in a car accident, some of his ashes were put aboard Lunar Prospector with that quotation and sent to the moon.
Very cool. All right, yeah. David, good information. And again, if folks are interested in one of your favorite telescopes, you can make a small donation. And the best place to go is Starizona. And just check it out. David, all the best.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you very much. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show. All right, coming up here for our final break, and after the break, we will have our attorney, Don Luce, our legal contributor to the Buckmaster Show, waiting in the wings, and he is coming up right after the break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. 2006. Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Joining me in studio for his monthly visit, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is our legal contributor and author of two very popular books. Books that I think are beneficial to every Arizonan. Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and I think folks would be very surprised. Some of the wacky laws that we have in the state of Arizona are articulated and explained in Arizona Laws 101, and a very important book. Everybody should be doing estate planning, and Don wrote the book on it, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you.
You know, I'm thinking back over the years to our many conversations, before marijuana was even legal in the state of Arizona, we were talking about initiatives, and slowly but surely, maybe not so slowly, states across the country are adopting, are saying yes to legalized marijuana.
They are, and Arizona was at the forefront of that, actually. Medical marijuana became legal more than a decade ago.
It's been that long.
It has. Interestingly, that proposition narrowly passed. I think it was like 50.5 to 49.5, mm-hmm. just the thinnest of margins. The recreational proposal, which passed several years ago, was by a much wider margin. So, as you can see, the citizens of Arizona are okay with the use of marijuana and for recreational purposes as well.
What about law enforcement and dealing with folks who are impaired with when drivers have marijuana residue in their system?
Right. Well, that's a good point, because marijuana doesn't, the metabolite doesn't just leave your body when you no longer feel the effects.
Unlike alcohol, perhaps?
Yes, or, yes, okay, yes. Okay. So if you're, for instance, legally using marijuana, you may have trace chemical elements for weeks, okay?
Are you kidding? Weeks?
Weeks. So if you get stopped and you get tested, right? It may be possible that the test will show metabolites from THC, which uh-huh. which haven't left your body. But you may not have used marijuana for days or
yeah.
longer.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, is that evidence sufficient to charge and prosecute you for driving under the influence of marijuana? There was a case that was recently decided that said, no, that in and of itself is not sufficient for the state to be able to charge a driver with illegally driving because of the use of marijuana. In that case, which is kind of a weird case because it came up on appeal from an administrative decision rather than from a court decision where the driver was found guilty of violating a criminal statute. It rather came up because the Department of Motor Vehicles suspended the driver's license for 90 days because the driver refused to take a field sobriety test. And the state was relying on the fact that the test results showed trace evidence of marijuana in the driver's mm-hmm, blood. Mm-hmm. But the court said you need more. Mm-hmm. You need to establish that the driver was impaired. And they actually looked at the proposition itself, which mm-hmm. was voter approved. And in the proposition, it says impaired to the slightest degree by marijuana. So you can have trace elements of marijuana in your blood. Mm-hmm. That's not illegal. Mm-hmm. But if you're impaired to the slightest degree, then that evidence would be sufficient to potentially convict you of driving while impaired.
Hmm. Well, it's a very interesting case, and I wonder if that is so. If someone is stopped and they take the test, right, and they have traces of marijuana in their system, can their license be suspended?
No, not on that evidence alone. It would require a coupling with an officer's testimony regarding his or her observations in the field.
Yeah.
So if the driver has slurred speech, watery eyes, is, you know, staggers on the field sobriety walk test, then yes, that evidence coupled with the evidence of marijuana in your system would probably be sufficient to sustain a conviction.
So the visual is critical almost in that case, right?
Yes.
The visual inspection by the officer.
The field sobriety test.
One of the propositions, and it's getting a lot of attention up in the Valley, up in Phoenix, it started out kind of as a reaction to what they call the zone, a blocks-long area near downtown Phoenix that was overrun with homeless people. What does this proposition say, Don Luce?
All right. So start at the beginning. In a month or so, there is going to be an opportunity for all residents to vote on a 10 propositions, 10 ballot initiatives, right? Most of them are legislative referrals, and this is one of them, Prop 312. Prop 312 essentially allows property owners who are affected by government's inaction to enforce ordinances concerning a variety of things to apply for property tax refunds. So, for instance, under this proposition, and of course it has to be passed, and you know, that's a separate question, but under 312, if you as a property owner complain to the city or the county that there's an encampment that is impacting you and your property, and there's an ordinance preventing illegal camping, and the city fails to do anything, and you have to essentially mitigate the effect of that, and I don't know what that might look like. Maybe you build a block wall or whatever you do. You can, under Prop 312, submit a bill to the Department of Revenue for the expense of mitigating against that situation. And if the city doesn't object, then the Department of Revenue will issue a refund against your property taxes up to the amount that you paid. If the city does object, or the county or whatever governmental unit's involved, then you have the right to bring a lawsuit for the property tax refund. But this is where it gets really interesting, because in most lawsuits, the person bringing the lawsuit, in other words, the plaintiff, has the burden of proving the allegations in the lawsuit.
Right.
Under this proposition, that would be reversed. The city or the county or the local government agency would have to prove that its actions or inactions are unlawful, or that the amount sought is unreasonable. So you're switching who has the burden of essentially convincing the court. In this case, it would be the government entity. That's huge, because the burden of proof in a civil case makes it more difficult for the plaintiff to prevail than the defendant. In other words, the plaintiff has to present evidence persuasive to the court. In this case, it's the opposite. The government has to essentially defend its position with affirmative evidence. Now, there's another part of this which is really kind of interesting as well. And it's a one-way street on attorney's fees.
What?
Yes. So if a property owner files a lawsuit and wins, the property owner is entitled to have his or her legal fees paid by the government entity. If the property owner files a lawsuit and loses, the reverse isn't true. There's no provision in the proposition for the government to be reimbursed its legal fees. So it's a one-way street on legal fees.
This is a lot to unpack, and I wonder if folks, a lot of times when people see something like this and they're really kind of, it's sort of confusing to say the least, how they're going to vote. Maybe they'll vote, I don't know.
Well, let's, okay, so I guess we should probably talk about how this even got on the ballot.
Right.
So in order for a legislative referral to get on the ballot, it has to have a majority vote in both House and Senate, State House and State Senate. And in this case, it got a 31-28 vote in the House and a 16-12 vote in the Senate. So we can presume it was along party lines, right? So it got on the ballot. What the ballot summary says is that if you vote yes, then you support allowing for property owners to apply for a property tax refund if the city or locality in which the property is located does not enforce laws or ordinances regarding illegal camping, loitering, obstructing public thoroughfares, panhandling, public urination or defecation, public consumption of alcoholic beverages, and possession or use of illegal substances. So as you can see, the list is long. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things on that list that a property owner can insist the city enforce. And if they don't, then the property owner under this proposition would have the right to a tax refund for the cost of mitigating against whatever the situation is.
Hmm. What do you make of this?
Given that, well, given that the property owner has to submit a claim to the government entity, right? So you submit a bill for the hypothetical block wall that you built.
Right.
My guess is that in most cases, the city is going to deny the claim.
Yes.
Which is then going to put the onus on the property owner to file a lawsuit.
Right.
So that would sort of implicate the hiring of a lawyer, mm-hmm. attorney's fees, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. expense. Mm-hmm. I think that it has the potential to clog the courts. That's my first thought.
Yeah.
And my second thought is that it's a process that, while at the end of the day requires the city to defend its position, puts the onus initially on the property owner because mm-hmm. they have to actually file the lawsuit against mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. city or the mm-hmm. county or whomever. Mm-hmm. So you have the potential for a lot of money spent on attorneys, and you have the potential for a lot of cases to essentially new cases in the system for the judges to have to decide. Mm. That's my take on it.
Mm. And this is one of 13 decisions on the ballot, right, that folks will be making?
I don't know if the number is 13, but there are a host of propositions that are on the ballot, including the ones that we've spoken about before, which include border enforcement,
sure,
abortion, free nonpartisan type of primaries,
right,
pro and con,
tipping.
I don't.
Is tipping on the ballot for restaurant workers?
I think that made it.
Yeah.
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 Minimum wage, I think, was the one that didn't make it.
That's right.
Yeah.
But when you have a four page ballot, Don, some folks are going to get down to that and just have no clue.
Well, you know, these are the statewide issues.
Yes.
Now, there are also issues that are unique to each individual area. So you have potential local school initiatives. You have city or county initiatives. You have initiatives that are not of a statewide nature. So in what we're talking about, everybody in the state of Arizona will have an opportunity to vote on. But a lot of voters are going to have a lot of other things to vote on and consider as well, including judicial retention, which is also one of the ballot initiatives that they're going to vote on. So they're going to have a list of judges. They vote yay or nay with regard to each judge. And then they're going to have a proposition that says we're going to abolish the system, which is kind of interesting. Same election.
All right, Don Luce. Thanks, Don. All the best to you.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. On behalf of Don, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.